Welcome back to the second hour of today's edition of the Dynamic Duo Show, right here on GCNLive.com. I'm Kevin Barrett. Today I'm talking with the authors of the two top stories in this month's edition of the Rock Creek Free Press, possibly our nation's best newspaper, right up there with the Liberty Voice. And there may be one or two others in that class. Not many. The Rock Creek Free Press is out of Washington, D.C. They've got the White House surrounded with their news boxes, telling the truth that the mainstream will not tell you. We just had on Barbara Honegger, whose article, The Links Between Anthrax Attacks and 9/11, was the second biggest story on the front page of the Rock Creek Free Press. Now let's bring on the screaming front page headline author, Ellen Brown. She's the author of Wall Street Meltdown, Fallout Hits Taxpayers. Subhead, it's the derivatives, stupid. Why Fannie, Freddie, AIG had to be bailed out. And I think this is possibly the best article yet in terms of summing up the financial crisis in a way that pulls it all together, makes the point that the quadrillion-dollar derivatives bubble is a key factor in all of this that they're not talking about in the mainstream. It's an honor to bring on Ellen Brown, the author of that article, as well as, I believe it's 10 or 11 books, many of them on alternative health topics. And she's written the book on the Federal Reserve, it's called Web of Debt. She appears to be one of the brightest lights in the movement to tell the truth about monetary policy. And I haven't had her on the show yet, so it's an honor to welcome her. Welcome, Ellen Brown. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, Kevin. It's great to be on. I read your platform. I totally agree with everything in it.
Really? All 25 positions? Barrett for Congress.us. That's amazing.
If I were in your state, I'd vote for you.
Hey, well, thanks. I appreciate it. Well, if you were running for anything, I would definitely vote for you. If I were elected, I would hire you as one of my advisors because you seem to be really on the money, as it were.
Thanks.
Yeah. So how did you start to get interested in this this really amazing issue of the way that our monetary system is really kind of a Ponzi scheme? It's fraudulent. It's very base. So many people haven't figured this out yet, but more and more are. How did you figure it out?
Well, most of my research is in alternative healthcare. I'm an attorney, and I represented some alternative healthcare practitioners. And one was one was a cancer therapist who was practicing in Tijuana and was kidnapped by the FBI, taken to Brownsville, Texas, et cetera. Anyway, one of his supporters was Ed Griffin, whose book, World Without Cancer, was Jimmy Keller's favorite book, and he showed the movie to all his patients. And in that book, it linked the drug cartel, which was my favorite enemy at the time, with the money cartel. I mean, they were the same thing. It came from the robber barons of the 19th century and Rockefeller, and set up the whole AMA system and the drug system, or the drug-based medicine system, as opposed to, say, homeopathy or the more natural systems that supported the body rather than trying to suppress what the body was doing. So then I realized that you couldn't solve the problem until you fixed the money problem. And it was such a mind-blowing discovery that our entire money system is based on debt, and it's all issued privately by banks. I mean, it's just something that nobody knows, and it seemed to me like such an important issue that I spent 6 years researching it, and it just got more and more interesting. The more I shone that light around the world and saw what was happening in different places, it just put a different light on everything I knew. So it was very motivating, very interesting.
Yeah, I actually learned a lot of what I know about this issue, which isn't all that much, from Ed Griffin, too. His book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, that impossible to put down. It's a thick book.
I read that second. And then I read Stephen Zarlinga's book. I've forgotten the title, but anyway, it was excellent.
And then you went out and wrote a book, Web of Debt. Tell us about that.
And then I discovered that The Wizard of Oz was actually written as a monetary allegory. And my first love is writing. I mean, I'm really a writer in search of a topic. And that was such a great topic, and it made it so interesting to be able to tie that all the way through. I use quotes from The Wizard of Oz in every chapter, and I just carried that story forward for the next century. of the characters in The Wizard of Oz and what they actually represented and how they were still there and we still had these issues going on. In the 19th century, 1890s, there was a huge populist movement to return to the government issued money of Lincoln, you know, the greenbacks that Lincoln issued during the Civil War. And it was actually the whole system of the American colonists for 100 years before the Revolution. And William Jennings Bryan headed that movement, and he was the candidate for, it was the last time that there was a third-party candidate that was actually a viable candidate, although he wound up running as a Democrat, and he lost, and then eventually, then the Federal Reserve Act was passed.
All right, don't forget Ross Perot. He got 20%.
Yeah, oh, that's true, yeah. Well, but I think William Jennings Bryan almost won. He came very close to winning.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so in the late 19th century, ordinary people, especially folks in the Midwest, like where I am, were actually aware of these issues and realized that the big international bankers were trying to take over the currency system for their own advantage. And now it seems that, you know, we've forgotten that, and there's sort of a rebirth of that knowledge going on, and you're contributing to that.
Mm-hmm. At that time, the paper money were paper banknotes issued by private banks, so it was pretty obvious that it was the bankers doing it. They were issuing banknotes supposedly backed by gold that they held in their vaults, but it's the nature of the fractional reserve system that we're still using today that they issued 10 times as many banknotes as they had gold. And people would figure this out periodically, and there would be runs on the banks where they'd all try to get their gold before it ran out. And then in 1933, Roosevelt took us off the gold standard, but we still are operating on a fractional reserve system, and the reserves now are U.S. bonds, which makes not a lot of sense. I mean, they're basically debt.
But it's all based on debt.
Yeah, and we never pay that debt off. So our money supply just keeps growing, and the debt keeps growing at the same pace. So we had the last time I ran the figures, it was a $10 trillion M3. It's now up to 12 or 13. Who knows? They quit reporting it. But that's the widest measure of the money supply formerly reported by the Federal Reserve. And at that time, the debt was up to about $9 trillion. So they were going up at the same time in the same exponential curve. In other words, our money essentially is the federal debt.
And I've heard it said that if we were to pay off all of our debt, then the money supply would largely disappear and the economy would crash.
True. But in fact, credit is what money should be. I mean, you could create a system where people take out credit, and that creates money for the time being, and then they pay it off. Basically, what they're doing is monetizing their own promise to repay. That's what credit is. And that's what banks do. They do not lend their depositors money, and they don't lend their own money. They lend merely credit. They create it as they lend it. So a government agency could do the same thing, and the interest could go back to the government, and that would fix our whole credit problem.
You know, that's exactly what Barbara Honegger was saying in the first hour. I guess great minds think alike, and I've heard a lot of other great minds, too. We'll be back in a bit. This is Kevin Barrett. I'm talking with Ellen Brown. She is the author of Web of Debt. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Yeah.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Dynamic Duo Show, and I'm Kevin Barrett talking with Ellen Brown. She is an up-and-coming into-the-limelight expert on the monetary system, author of Web of Debt, as well as 10 other books, mainly on natural healing. And there is a connection. The same corrupt forces running our monetary system are running the pharmaceutical industry and trying to keep the natural treatments out of business. Well, Ellen, you were saying that having the Treasury coin our own money as a democratic policy, we could be coining our own money rather than having the bankers do it at interest, is an obvious solution to the problem. And I certainly agree with that. The problem itself, though, may be deeper than it first appears. Your article in the Rock Creek Free Press argues that this current financial crunch is not really just about a bunch of bad mortgages pumped out by Alan Greenspan, but actually there's an even bigger problem lurking behind that, which is the derivative bubble. And maybe you can give us your rundown on the derivative bubble.
Okay, derivatives are just bets, but they've been sold as a form of insurance. But there is no regulator for this insurance. They're not real insurance under the state insurance commissioner, so there's no requirement that the counterparty has the money to pay up.
So who has the right to do this? I mean, could I, like, put out some derivatives myself saying, hi, Kevin Barrett, you know, six figures in debt with no earnings beyond what I can convince my listeners to send me from GCN here, hereby insure all of these lousy mortgages, and I put out a piece of paper and people will pay me for it. I mean, can I do that?
That was what Charles Ponzi did, actually, pretty much.
Right. Well, who are these people that do this?
Well, there are over-the-counter derivatives, which are private agreements between people, and they can do anything they want contractually. And then there are listed derivatives. So it's something like 600 trillion in listed, and then in a nearly equal amount in over-the-counter. So it's over a quadrillion, according to the Bank for International Settlements. Derivatives.
Quadrillion dollars. Now, how many trillion is that?
A thousand trillion. And it's one of those imaginary numbers. When you were a kid, it was an imaginary number. Like, I'll bet you a quadrillion.
So that's how much liquidity is floating around in the form of derivatives. And what's the gross national product of the Earth? I mean, it's a lot less than the quadrillion.
60 trillion all the countries of the world combined.
So this is something like 15 times bigger than the entire gross Earth product?
Right. So we obviously can't guarantee these derivatives. The derivatives were used to guarantee the loans, the subprime loans, the collateralized debt obligations that were so controversial a year ago, and now nobody wants to buy them. And the banks were using these derivatives to move risky debt off their books. They have a capital requirement imposed by the Bank for International Settlements, which is in Switzerland. So it's not even us imposing this requirement. It's the head of the private banking, central banking business in Europe. They impose this 8% capital requirement, and they've been known to use it to keep down banks. Well, for instance, they brought down Japan in the 90s with the capital requirement. So American banks have gotten around this capital requirement by putting derivative bets on these loans that would otherwise be risky, and they say, well, don't worry, because we've bet away the risk. In other words, somebody has agreed to bear the risk in exchange for the counterparty paying a certain premium. So they've sold the risk, so they got to rate these bad loans, these very dodgy loans that they've gone around and, you know, taking anybody's loan from anybody, because they weren't worried about it because they were protected supposedly by these credit default swaps, which are a form of derivative.
How do these derivatives get to be so much? They're so much bigger than what they're guaranteeing.
Well, it turned out to be such a good deal that it's just basically gambling, and everybody loved it around the world. So you have many times more bets on things than things are even worth. Like they're or something like six times the amount of bets on General Motors collapsing than the actual value of the entire business. So you can't possibly pay these things off. And one limiting factor is some of these derivatives say that you have to actually own the asset to collect. So then there's this big scramble to come up with some actual interest in the thing that you bet on in the event that you won. Anyway, it's because of these collateralized debt obligations, or these credit default swaps have had to be paid off for some big companies lately. There was Lehman Brothers collapse, and the Fed and the Treasury didn't save it, unlike Bear Stearns and some others. And Washington Mutual collapsed, and AIG it was bought out by the Fed and Fannie and Freddie. So all the people that bet on those things, those bets have now come due, and so the people on the other side of the bets have to pay up. Well, many of them are hedge funds, and they just go bankrupt if they can't afford to pay up. But that's why those bets now no longer protect all that subprime debt that was on the bank's books and made it look like they had met their capital requirements. So now that those loans are no longer risk-free, they're risky loans, and therefore it takes a certain amount of capital to back them, so the banks no longer have the capital requirement that they require to make more loans. So that's why we have a credit freeze, a very arbitrary and, you know, contrived thing. But it was all to keep this Ponzi scheme going, which is the private banking system.
And it would be so much easier to just have the Treasury loan its own money into existence and bypass these parasitical gamblers and bankers, wouldn't it?
Right. The reason that Congress went ahead and passed this $700 billion bailout scheme is that everybody thinks we have to have the banks to get credit, but that's absolutely not true. If they were actually lending real money, pre-existing money, that might be true, but they're not. They're just advancing credit. They're just monetizing the borrower's own promise to repay, and a federal agency could do that better, or a state agency. I like the idea of state banks. States can set up their own banks, they can own banks, and they could issue money to themselves, to state and local governments, interest-free, and save all these governments that are now going bankrupt.
Well, that sounds like a plan. You know, maybe I'll be urging the state of Wisconsin to do that. Start the Bank of Wisconsin. We can create a new unit of currency called the Badger.
Well, you can use dollars.
Yeah?
It's just like private banks issue dollars. Our state bank could do the same thing, though they don't have the dollars. That's the fractional reserve system.
No, I like that idea, and we'll talk some more about it when we come back. So stick around.
This is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
Hey, Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start to make it better. Hey, Jude, don't be
welcome
afraid.
Back. You're listening to the Dynamic Duo Show right here at GCNLive.com. I'm Kevin Barrett. I'm talking with Ellen Brown. She's the author of Web of Debt. She's on the web at ellenbrown.com. And Ellen, I agree with you completely that we do need a network of public banks coining the currency on behalf of the people rather than coining usurious currency and lending it into existence on behalf of a private banking cartel such as the Federal Reserve. And the impediment to getting that kind of reform, of course, is the power of these billionaire bankers. And various people have come up with, you know, various kinds of, you know, hypotheses about how that power operates behind the scenes. There are quotes from people like Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson saying that, we all know that these banking powers in the major cities have owned the government since the days of Andrew Jackson and so on and so forth. How can we expose this kind of power in order to get the reforms we need?
That's a good question, but I think the first thing we have to do is just get a lot of information out there. If people realize what the system is, they would revolt. I mean, I don't mean physically, literally, but it could be, the system could be changed. If you had a mass grassroots movement of people who were aware of what the problem was. But honest about these state banks, it seems to me that if you had even an enlightened state legislature, they could set up a series of banks. You know, there are state banks and federal banks. I mean, there's two different systems of banking. And states can charter their own banks, and they could set their own rules for the bank. So they could take some fund of money and call that reserves. I mean, technically, you wouldn't even need reserves if you're a government-owned bank issuing, if you're a federal bank issuing the full faith and credit of the United States, you shouldn't need reserves at all, because what are the reserves? I mean, it's your own credit backing your own credit. There's nothing backing it. It's just credit. But anyway, if you want to follow the rules and not make too many waves, let's say they would take some fund of money and call that their reserves, and then they could lend 10 times that sum, because the reserve requirement is 10%, to state and local governments, let's say, at 0% interest. There's no requirement that they charge a particular interest. 0% interest for these very safe bets, which are governments, because they've got the taxing power behind them. The reason governments are going broke right now is because the monoline insurers, which insured municipal bonds, lost their AAA ratings, so the bonds no longer had AAA ratings, which makes no sense at all. There's no better debtor. There are no more sure bet than a state and local government. So there, I read one place, for instance, the Port Authority of New York had to pay 20% interest on some 5-year bond.
Man, that's worse than my cousin's credit card.
And that just over 5 years at 20%, you've increased the cost of the project from by a factor of 2.5. In other words, it's 2.5 times as expensive as it was 5 years ago. And what if it was a 20-year project? $1,000 at 20% interest compounded annually becomes $38,000 in 20 years. So it's no wonder state and local governments are going bankrupt. If you took away the interest charge, all these projects that we think we can't afford would not only become affordable, they would become profitable. For instance, improving transportation, trains and buses and all those things, public transport. Alternative energy could be developed, low-cost housing. You could do all these things very cheaply if you got rid of interest. Even at old rates, it was 50% of the cost of everything was averaged out to be, the interest took up 50% of the cost of everything. So you could cut the cost in half by eliminating interest. And now it's gotten much worse because of this problem with the derivatives and the monolines and the no longer being able to get insurance for their bonds.
Well, let me pose a question. This would be coming from the perspective of a friend of mine who's a Muslim student of economics. And I guess there's a critique from the Muslim perspective. They say that, yes, this no-interest ideal is what we want. You know, interest is supposed to be banned. There shouldn't be any interest. But if you're doing this kind of lending money into existence based on only 10% reserves or possibly no reserves at all, you're basically just creating money out of thin air, doesn't that always lead to inflation? And isn't there a temptation that if you start doing that, hey, let's lend even more, you know, let's do even more work, let's have bigger projects, let's employ more people, let's create even more money, and so you end up increasing the money supply by too big of a factor, and you're going to have inflation.
Well, that would be true if you were merely issuing the money, but I'm talking about lending it, which is merely credit. So all you're saying is, we'll pay it back over, we don't have the money now, let's do the project and we'll pay it back over time from the profits of our project. That is not inflationary. In fact, it's much more inflationary to charge a high interest rate, because in our current system, the only source of money is debt. You have to borrow it to get more money. The banks create the principal, but they don't create the interest necessary to pay off their loans. So somebody is always scrambling to take out yet another loan to find the money to pay the interest on the existing money supply. So if it were interest-free, you wouldn't need to keep raising your prices in order to cover the interest cost of your production.
That's a really good point. And that makes you realize just what a racket these bankers have. I've compared it to the house in Las Vegas. If the gamblers were the businesses and the house was the banking system, you know, eventually the house ends up raking in all of the money, and pretty much everybody else leaves broke. And is that what's happening with this banking system? And does that mean that these leading international financiers are basically taking complete control over the wealth of our planet?
That is what's happening. And that's why the money supply has expanded and expanded, and the debt has expanded, because if you had a fixed money supply, you would quickly, the creditors would quickly have all the money, and then they wouldn't, I mean, they would have exhausted their food source. So for the parasite to keep the whole system going, they have to keep expanding the money supply, inflating the money supply. But at some point, mathematically, if on this exponential curve, just the interest to service this debt system is more than the people can pay, and that's when the whole pyramid collapses, and that's where we are right now, or very close.
So we're close to the collapse of the entire system. That's a very interesting moment to be in. One would think that the people running the system and profiting by it wouldn't want to kill the goose that lays the golden egg.
No, I don't think they do, but there's not much you can do. I mean, every pyramid scheme in history has collapsed eventually. Of course, you want to milk it as long as you can, and I think that's what the $700 billion bailout is about. But it can't work. I mean, they're trying to fill a black hole, and eventually the hole will suck the system into it.
And what time frame do you see this happening in? At what point will the real economy start to collapse along with the paper economy?
Well, I'm hoping that we can set up an alternative real economy. Ideally, you know, it could collapse into totalitarian, fascist, whatever, something horrible. But if we have awareness soon enough, we could set up what Roosevelt did, or Reconstruction Finance Corporation, which is an alternative, or it was a government-owned banking system, essentially a credit facility, which funded the whole New Deal and World War II, and it worked really well. But the problem was they used borrowed money. They had to borrow the money before they lent it. So you could set up that sort of system, but just issue credit the same way a bank does without borrowing it first.
Well, that's a great idea, and let's hope somebody up there in high places of power is listening. We'll be back in a moment. Kevin Barrett with Ellen Brown. Stay tuned. Welcome back. We're talking about a finance revolution here. This is Kevin Barrett talking with Ellen Brown. She is the author of the big front page headline story in the October Rock Creek Free Press on the financial meltdown. And she's also the author of Web of Debt. You can check her out at ellenbrown.com. Ellen, these reforms you're proposing seem so sensible that no wonder none of the politicians, except me, are talking about them. Do you have any hope that any mainstream politicians who are likely to get elected to anything are going to pick this up and run with it anytime soon?
I have hope, but I'm just a writer. All I can do is write and talk.
Yeah, well, that's what I said, too, and then I decided to run for Congress, and now I'm a writer who's running for Congress, writing and talking, and you know, having a hard time getting a hearing in the mainstream. It's tough, you know. I don't quite understand why it is But the mainstream media really doesn't seem very open to these kinds of eminently sensible and truthful ideas.
No, I agree. But I think the Internet will be our salvation because it is becoming more and more the alternative news source. I don't read conventional papers anymore. I just go right to the Internet.
Well, that's what I was trying to tell the editorial board over at the La Crosse Tribune, one of the two biggest papers in my district, the other day. They were saying, well, you know, you're not, these issues you're raising and your perspectives don't really seem to be, you know, talked about in the media, do they? And I said, well, they are actually being talked about. The only real discussion is, in fact, of these issues, and it's happening on the Internet. You know, you guys are not having any discussion of anything, and so you're making yourselves irrelevant. I'm not sure they were happy to hear that.
Yeah, everybody has said to me that I was prescient and ahead of my time, and how did I know? Well, it was because I was reading all those Internet sources a year ago, and they knew this was coming. In fact, for years I was afraid that the whole thing would collapse before I got my book done. I kept feeling like I was spending too much time on footnotes, and I just had to get it out there because it was all set to collapse.
That's
and
a
it
good
did
point.
Collapse. It did collapse 2 weeks after, well, actually, the Bear Stearns, the first collapse of the two Bear Stearns hedge funds was in June of 2007, and my book was in print 2 weeks later, and I managed to put that in there because I did it by print-on-demand lightning source.
Wow. Well, that's pretty good timing.
Yeah.
And, of course, in a sense, it's never really good timing for a financial meltdown, but how's your book doing, and how do you promoting it on the honest Internet airwaves like this show? Have you done any touring or anything?
No. I write articles. That's my mainly what I do. But it's the same deal where the Internet now, the gatekeepers are gone. You can get out there if you have a good writing style and some good ideas, and you don't have to either pay a lot of money to get on TV or for that type of promotion, or get past editors who may not approve or think that their supporters or their, you know, sponsors may not approve or whatever. So it is a much freer system now. Actually, my book Web of Debt, though, is only available on Amazon and on my website, webofdebt.com. I worked on getting it in bookstores, and it was, I don't know, I just don't have time to do everything, so I'm just focusing on writing.
I have the same problem with my book, Truth Jihad, My Epic Struggle Against the 9/11 Big Lie. That was a hard one to place in too many bookstores.
Well, you have to give a 55% discount to get in bookstores, which means you have to do a print run, and I don't know, it was just more than I could do.
Yeah. Well, this kind of information is getting out there, and as I was telling the La Crosse Tribune people, there is a consensus that's developing on these issues. You know, there may be a little bit of controversy between some sort of, you know, hard money libertarians who want to, you know, go to a sort of a precious metal system where anybody can start a bank, like Ron Paul, versus people like you and I guess and me, because I'm leaning towards this sense that having the public currency is probably a better way, at least in the short run. But overall, there is a consensus that's developed as a result of this free and fair debate on the Internet that this current system is a Ponzi scheme that's collapsing and needs to be reformed. The Federal Reserve needs to be ended. I don't see anybody defending the Federal Reserve system in this free and fair debate.
No. And it seems like, well, I actually think Ben Bernanke, I wrote a chapter on his helicopter money. It looked to me like he actually understands the solution and that it is government-issued money, but he's not in that position. You know, the Federal Reserve is only authorized to create money in open market operations, which is where they print dollars and buy bonds with them. So basically it all has to be backed with government debt. He's not really in the position to change the system, even though he might understand. But, you know, he just opened the lending window to businesses with this short-term commercial paper facility. It's called the Commercial Paper Funding Facility or something. So that's going way beyond the usual scope of the Federal Reserve. Supposedly, it was only supposed to make loans to its member banks, except in extreme emergencies. And then they opened it up to investment banks, which was, you know, Bear Stearns. That was radical at the time back in February, and now that seems pretty mild. And then they bought an insurance company. They bought AIG, which was
radical.
The world's
biggest insurance company, wasn't it?
Right. And now they've opened the lending window up to businesses in general, or qualifying businesses. So they understand that the regular banking system has failed and that they have to step in just to keep the credit going. So the next logical step would be to actually nationalize the Federal Reserve. And my guess is that Ben Bernanke understands that. He's a professor. He's not really from the, unlike the usual head of the Federal Reserve, he's not really from the banking industry. Or unlike Henry Paulson, who is from Goldman Sachs and was kind of instrumental in creating this whole derivatives problem.
So you think Helicopter Ben is actually, he's got the right idea. He wants to throw actual U.S. currency from the helicopter rather than Federal Reserve notes.
Well, I don't know that for a fact. But when he was talking about helicopter money, he said the government has a tool called the printing press. He didn't say the Federal Reserve, which is not actually a government agency or not government-owned. So I just got that sense. You know, he wrote his dissertation on the Depression, and I think maybe that was why. I mean, that was one reason that he got the job. They knew they were heading for another depression, and they found somebody who might know how to manage it.
Well, that's interesting. You know, now we've had two Webster Tarpley positions taken down in today's show. Barbara Honegger was laying into Webster during the first hour. Webster is so down on Obama, and you've just challenged Webster's belief that Bernanke is a bad guy. It sounds like he may actually understand what's needed here.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say anything kind about Henry Paulson.
Right.
But I don't know. Okay, I'm a sucker for beautiful eyes.
Okay, well, in that case, I don't know anything about Bernanke's eyes,
it's what my mother's way of voting. She looks at somebody and she says, oh, I couldn't listen to him for 4 years. That's the way she decides.
Uh-huh. So who's she voting for?
I'm voting for Cynthia McKinney because I helped her write her economic policy. I'm not sure I've persuaded my mother on that one or not.
Well, I like Cynthia McKinney's eyes, too.
Right.
Her eyes speak truth to power. Okay, well, hey, thank you, Ellen Brown. It's been a real pleasure having you on. I hope you'll come back on the show again sometime.
Okay, great talking to you. Thanks, Kevin.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, that's Ellen Brown. Ellenbrown.com. She's the author of Web of Debt, and I guess there's a website, webofdebt.com, as well. Highly recommended stuff. Great to have her on for the first time. Well, we'll be back with more great guests on Friday. So until then, enjoy your midweek, and see you later.